Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I've got a feeling that this is going to be a rather different episode of Folk on Foot. We're in the area of Southall in West London, not far from Heathrow Airport, which is sometimes known as Little India or Little Punjab, because a lot of families from South Asia came and settled here in the 1950s and 60s, and it still has a very strong flavour of that community. And we're here to meet our very first drummer. And it's not any old drummer, this is Johnny Calsey, famous for his collaboration with Transglobal Underground, with the Imagined Village, with the Afro-Celt Sound System, and with his own Doll Drumming Foundation. And Johnny's going to take us for a tour of this area, dropping in on a couple of music shops and a restaurant, and telling us why this area makes such an impact on him and his music. Hi, Johnny. I'm Matthew.
How are you, Matthew?
Really nice to meet
you.
Thanks for coming. This is Natalie. Where are you going to take us today?
Oh, I'm going to take you to two music shops, and then we're going to eat.
Well, what are we going to eat?
We're eating some stuff that you've never tried in your life. An explosion of flavours, let's just put it that way.
Fantastic. Oh, that's brilliant. Well, let's set off.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go.
So here we are, we're in the heart of Southall, and this is Singh Sabha Gurdwara, which is like a Sikh temple, one of about four or five Sikh temples in Southall. And basically what we're going to pay our respects to our holy book.
What do we have to do when we go in there?
Basically the two main things you do is cover your head and take your shoes off and then wash your hands. That's all you have to do. And not be intoxicated.
Right, well, I'm not intoxicated. Will they give me a head covering to wear?
They will indeed, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Let's go in.
Come in. Come in. We take our shoes off over there. So this is a very important place where your feet and your shoes are all together. So basically, it don't matter how much money you've got, it don't matter what walk of life, in here, everyone's equal.
Right.
Because your shoes go in the same place.
Take them off.
Exactly. And then you can go, and then we wash our hands after touching our feet.
So basically, when we go into the hall, at that end is our holy book, and it's on display. So our holy book is like a living entity.
Uh-huh.
So he's our last guru that died in the 1700s. He basically said, after me, there won't be any more gurus, but this is the scripture of all of our 10 gurus. They were prophets, and basically the scriptures, they were placed in one book. And it's the Guru Granth Sahib, so it's a living entity for us. So we treat it like a living entity. So we walk to the front, we bow, and then we put our head on the floor to basically signify we are lower than
the Almighty
Deity. Yeah. We don't have a name for God. Our God is the universe.
Right.
It's right. Within every living thing, which is why, you know, it's all about humanity. Mm-hmm.
I've always associated Sikhs with a turban, with the beards and so on, but do you have to have a turban and a beard to enter the building
here? No. Certainly when my parents came over in the 60s, a lot of Sikhs, they started cutting their hair and shaving their beards off because they couldn't get jobs, you know. Particularly a lot of people that got jobs in London Transport, they didn't want people with turbans and beards because people felt intimidated getting on a bus with the driver. So a lot of people cut their hair and shaved their beards, and they kind of ended up staying like that. But, you know,
although, but it's still important to you as part of the religion.
Yeah, I mean, it became my identity. When I was younger, I had the choice to either, you know, cut my hair or keep it. But I was already playing my drum, and I felt it kind of went hand in hand. But that was me being a teenager, not thinking about religion and more thinking about the image of what I do.
Right. So you like the image of the turban and the beard?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's become my identity.
And you are a bit of a natty dresser, I have to say.
Yeah, Johnny. I'm a bit snazzy,
you're all in black today with lacing up the front of your shirt and some bangles and necklaces.
It's normally the women that notice that, but yeah. Yeah, but I'm glad you did.
Yeah, it looks very smart.
Awesome.
I'd say.
Thanks.
Listen, let's head off to the music
let's do
shop.
It. Yeah, let's
see if we can find a drum.
We're going left, so, and over the bridge.
Now, the first thing that strikes you in here is there are one or two drums.
This is like, it should have been called the House of Drums, isn't it, really? But yeah. They do all sorts of instruments here. So, from little drone harmoniums like that, which are quite incredible instruments. They're just like, they're so, and
we've had a few of those on Folk on Foot before.
There
yeah,
you go, yeah.
So you can pump the air with your hand and then play the keyboard.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So,
but then there's rack after rack of drums.
Doll drums, yeah, and tablas, yeah. And it's.
And what is a doll drum? Just give us the definition of a doll drum.
So a doll drum is basically a large wooden shell, and traditionally would have been covered on either side, like a hollowed out barrel, either side with goatskin, and one side would be treated and basically paper thin and then stretched over really tight, and then the shape of the instrument used to be rounded like this to basically maintain the tension in the ropes. So you see this, you see how it's strung,
yeah, the ropes run so along the sides,
you can't even like lift it off the drum because the shape of the drum is keeping the tension, and so because of that it would have a contrasting sound, a high end on one side and a low end on the other side, all in one drum.
Didn't they let us borrow one?
Yeah
we shall we try and get one?
Yeah Rachna, are you all right?
Okay, all right, thank you very much. Beena Musicals, we've been here for over 45 years, and it's a family business. Grandfather started it in Delhi over 80 years ago. So we're the third generation, and my mum was called Beena. So when she was born, my grandfather changed the name of the family business to Beena. So we're known for our harmoniums worldwide. that's what we started from. And I know that Johnny used to come when he was much younger, and I was much younger as well, and he used to spend time here with my dad, and he's one of our favourites.
We've got Johnny's poster up.
We have. Go for it. Do whatever you need to do.
Do you mind if we play some instruments?
I don't mind at all. Yeah. I must be honest with you, Johnny. I'm not sure what's in tune, what's not.
That's all right.
I'll tune. Do you want me to get in the step ladder if you want to get from the top?
I'll get
the step ladder.
Thanks, darling.
Because the drums are just going up to the ceiling here. There's a rack and rack and rack and rack.
You should see when they've got a delivery. The whole floor is covered. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
So they're all sort of like nowadays, right? Obviously, because, like I said, traditionally, they would have goatskin on both sides, right? The thing with that is, bringing these drums over to sunny England, the goat hide absorbs the moisture in the air, and it affects the tuning and the tension when you've got a skin that's like, 13, 14 inches. So it doesn't hold the tension.
So have the goatskins been replaced by artificial materials on some
of
them?
Yes, indeed they have, yeah. So basically most of these now have got hooks, and they are synthetic plastic skins on them now, which makes them maintenance-free, really. They don't absorb the moisture so much.
So you don't mind that? You don't mind the change from the goatskin?
Do you know what? When you're doing, like, 8 gigs a week, doing it with a goat hide won't work.
It won't wear out.
And then the other problem is, if it rips, one of these you can change in about 20 minutes. One of those ones, you have to unstring the whole thing, and it takes about 2 hours.
Right.
By which time your gig will be finished. Yeah. I think maybe 3 times in my career I've been on stage and I've had to swap a skin over or swap a drum over. This is a tabla. This one's a nice one, the drums. And it's not like a normal drum. I mean, just to get that one sound out, probably when I was a kid, took me a good part of 4 weeks every day practicing just to, so it would ring like that. Have a go.
Okay.
So basically you're putting your pinky and the next finger on the edge of the drum, just resting it gently. Middle finger stays in the air, and with this part of your index finger, where the line is, the top line has to meet that line there. So, and you let it bounce off. Very relaxed motion.
Try it.
Right there.
There?
There. See, you're biting your lip now, so I can...
Concentrating. Okay.
So the sound that we're after...
I'm not getting such a good sound as you. Is that because I'm not hitting it hard enough?
The attack and the decay. So the attack is the point of contact from your finger hitting the skin. The decay is the sound afterwards.
So why am I not getting that? Let's try that. Why am I not getting that?
Okay, so the reason you're not getting it is because you're actually pressing down rather than bouncing off.
So relax
your finger. It's got to be a hit.
Oh. Obviously, I'm not musical.
So we could be here a while. So there's two sounds, and the other sound, that's on the edge, that's known as na or da, and that's a thin. You can hear the difference in the tone. And then you've got dun as well.
How do you do that?
Hit it across ways. That's probably an easier sound to get. For me. I'm determined to make him make a sound today. Just too stiff.
Too stiff?
Yeah, just relax it. Relax it all. Let it go floppy.
Okay.
And then just... No, floppy. And then use your hand. There you go. Look. See what happens?
Oh, I can get used to this.
There you go. And then you have muted sounds that you make on here. Dick, dick, get, dick.
Didigidada.
So fantastic.
Basically, the phonetic language of tabla can be spoken between two tabla players on a bus without the aid of a tabla.
Right, so you just use the
phonetic language,
the spoken word, as
yeah.
it were.
And then basically your fingers, the lines on your fingers become your metronome. And there's 16, 1, 2, 3, 4. So counting from the bottom line of your pinky to the middle one being number 2, to the top line being number 3, and the very top where your nail sits, number 4. So 4 on each finger, 16 beats. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. And your thumb is the counter. And that becomes your metronome. Or you can go straight across, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 1, and 2, and 3, and 4, and 1, and 2, and 3. So basically, between when you're learning tabla, one thing you have to understand, between 1 and 2, we have 64 beats.
Right. So what?
So you know, you've got like... You've got the one, and then you've got two, then you can have one and two. You can also have one E and a two. Yeah? And then it kind of goes on from
faster and
so
faster.
It goes
faster
and faster. So between one and two in tabla, there's 64.
Can you show us that on the drums?
Yeah, if you want. So it's just a speed thing, basically. So you've got, let's say... That's a whole cycle, right? That's a whole loop.
5 when the immigrant families came here, that it was largely looking for work.
Looking for work, yeah, and the prospects of a better life, more wages and better education for the kids, ultimately. But, you know, my history goes back to, like, the 1900s, the time of the Raj in India, the empire.
Your history does, your family history does.
Yeah, so
right,
my granddad,
yeah.
My granddad, when he was born, it was under the British flag, and he was given Empire passports, British Empire passports, British ones.
Right.
So,
where did he live?
In India, Punjab.
Right.
And then, basically, he got married in India, and then they left. The reason they left is because the Empire then took over East Africa. He worked on the railway, and he was one of the main guys that did the overhauling of locomotives. So anyway, my whole family were born in Kenya. Their first language as they grew up was Punjabi at home, Swahili at school, and English. They went to British schools. And my dad, he married out there. Mum was from Mombasa. My dad was from Nairobi. And... yeah, my whole family, we're all Kenyan. So basically, here's the thing. People with turbans like this, with pleats down one side and slight pointy, they're from Kenya.
Oh, is that right? There's
and
a distinctive turban.
If you see Sikhs with round turbans like you did in the temple there, they're from India.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Big difference.
And what brought your family to the UK?
Well, in 1967... a real nasty piece of work called Idi Amin came into power in Uganda.
Yeah.
And he basically said, everyone with a British passport, get out of my country or I'm going to kill you. And because Uganda was a neighbouring country to Kenya, they started hearing over the wireless that it was happening over the border. As soon as my grandparents heard that that was happening, they left. And came straight to England. And once again, because my granddad, he was, you know, he was a skilled engineer.
He came here and started working for one of the steel works in Leeds. So he settled there because, you know, the steel industry was massive up there, you know. So, yeah, and my granddad fought for the British in the Second World War. He was a rifle engineer.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were born in Leeds?
I'm a Yorkshireman, yeah.
Nice to meet another Yorkshireman. Fantastic.
Pleasure, yeah. And then when I was 2 years old, they moved down to London.
And to this part of the world? Southall?
Yeah, not too far from here, Hounslow, yeah. And the thing about my granddad working in that, the Bristol Archives, they got in touch with me. It was only about 4 or 5 years ago. And they said, we're doing an exhibition. And the exhibition's called Empire Through the Lens. That's what it's called. And they had a whole archive of photographs of the British Empire from India to Africa to, like, absolutely all over. And they said, we need to select you as an artist to pick one photograph.
Really?
Of, like, I'm talking a few hundred thousand photos.
Oh my goodness, how did you make the choice?
It was difficult at first, and I was looking for Indian instruments. I was looking for a door drum, you know, and I did find a couple. But the one that really struck a chord, I'm going to show it to you now because I keep it in.
Got it on your phone?
Yeah, I've got it on my phone. The one that really struck a chord was this one here. And the reason it did is because of the story I've just told you of my granddad. So I'll let you describe it.
Oh, wow. This is a locomotive being built, isn't it? It's a big steam engine being built, and it's hanging from a crane above a team of men who are working on the wheels down at the bottom. And is that by any chance your granddad?
It's not, but he did the same job as my granddad.
Right, yeah. So
that would be unusual if it was
it would be extraordinary if it had been your granddad.
Of a few hundred thousand photographs and then finding him. But this is it. This is the very workshop that he worked in.
Wow.
In Nairobi.
So that is part of your story in a way. That
this was picture. A part of my hereditary past, my nomadic past, yeah. If you like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here, just at the bottom, is the details of my name and my granddad's name and everything. It's all.
So that's the caption from the exhibition?
From the exhibition.
And
yeah.
So your story was told in the exhibition?
Yes, it was.
Oh,
yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So your family story and your heritage must be hugely important to you.
It's important to me, in the sense that what I took from that and what I turned into and how I actually shaped my life, I thought I was quite unique, only until I got into my sort of late teens fighting the NF in Hounslow.
National Front?
Yes, the National Front, yeah. Who was a movement that didn't want to see any of this.
And they used to stage marches through this area, didn't they?
Through the other side of Southall.
To protest against immigration and the community setting itself up.
And there was
here.
A fair few riots as well.
Right. And yeah. So did you pick, you know, did you use your fists? Did you? Was it a violent resistance that you were putting up, or was it?
It was, yeah. I can't lie.
No.
It was definitely violent, yeah.
And
yeah.
It must have been, the atmosphere must have been really tense and dangerous.
It was, and a lot of people moved out of Southall because they didn't want to get involved in all of that. That movement, it wasn't only in Southall, but, you know, even in Hounslow bus garage, there'd be, like, gangs of boys, skinheads, in those green jackets and ripped jeans. I'd never forget it, because their image is just so... And Dr. Martin boots. That image will stick with me for the rest of my life, because that's, you know, and that was a sign of, like, I was looking at a pack of wolves, dogs, you know, it was like that. Until two of them came along, and then me and a few other Indian chaps, we decided to pick on them for a change and see how they liked it, until one of them got away, ended up running into a pub, 20 of them came out.
Oh my goodness.
And we ran. And there was only, like, four of us.
You're in fear of your life.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And we got a good kick in. We got a good hiding. But one of those chaps that was with me, his name's Bobby Friction, who's now a Radio 1 DJ.
I know him very well, yeah. I know Bobby Friction.
Yeah. So there was quite, you know, it was quite funny because, you know, from that movement, I kind of, you know, we all listened to Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan at home. And at schools, we'd listen to, like, Duran Duran and Led Zeppelin, and, you know, it's just...
I'm just interested in how you felt as somebody who was born in the UK,
yeah,
brought up here, British as you come, finding these people coming to your area of town and trying to throw you out and threatening you with violence. You know, what did that make you feel?
Very confused, to start with, because even growing up, even in schools, when I'd have fights... I'd hear constantly, go back to your own country. It was only till later, when I got a little bit of education of... Because they don't teach you about the empire in schools. They don't tell you about British history like that. They tell you about kings and queens and about stuff here, but they do not tell you the truth. That's the problem. And the truth was that they came to our country first. And they raped all of those countries. And even though my granddad even helped build the railway and help them overhauling the, as you've heard, what they were actually doing was building a railway so they could rape the land of its minerals and all its gold. And I mean, that diamond, Koh I Noor, the one that's in the coronation crown, that massive diamond it belongs to India. So the interesting thing about all of that is...
It plays with your head, doesn't it?
It does play with your head, because I was told, go back to your own country, but...
But that's Leeds.
And then, even growing up, the question is, where do you come from? And I go, well, I was born in Leeds. Here, UK. Where did your parents come from? And I go, oh, they're from Kenya. And
that really confused people.
That's not the answer that they were looking for. And they go, what about your grandparents? I go, oh, they came from India. I knew you were going to say that.
Eventually they get back there because of the way you look.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So they make the assumption, and then they just kind of go, oh, that's what he does. He plays an Indian instrument. He must come from there.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Are you getting a round of applause from the people in the shot too? That's amazing. I mean, presumably it's not an instrument you always play on your own. I mean, you would normally be playing with other instruments around you, would you?
Yeah, so basically with the Dorr Foundation, I started out teaching people, and it was a school. We ended up with like 400, 500 drummers.
Wow.
At one stage, with 14 different institutes.
And you've done appearances at folk festivals as the Dorr Foundation, haven't you?
Yeah.
What do you do? Take 20 drummers with you? Or
on occasions, yeah.
Right. That must be some sound. Yeah. And are they all playing the Dorr drums?
They're all playing a Dorr drum, yeah.
Wow, you could hear that some fields away, couldn't you? You could hear it, you know, county away.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
And what's the atmosphere like on stage when you're doing that?
Oh, it's electric. It really is. So with that many drummers playing in unison, it's just like... You can feel the rhythm going through you. It's just a wall of drums and a wall of sound of these incredible instruments playing out rhythms that you just can't help but move to. You know, that's basically what it is, infectious rhythms that people just want to dance to all the time.
And how does it go down at a folk festival when you've got, you know, normally you've got the singer with the guitar, you know, comes, or somebody with a fiddle or a bit of a squeeze box or something like that? How does it go down when you turn up with 20 of your mates?
Yeah, it's interesting.
And you start to feel the vibrations in your stomach.
One year at Cambridge Folk, I heard someone in backstage saying, well, it's not exactly folk, is it?
And what's your response to that?
Well, I kind of just laughed, really. And I went, no, not really, it isn't.
Is that what they mean by folk?
It's their interpretation of, I think they were expecting British folk music.
Yeah.
But they obviously hadn't heard of the Imagine Village back then, so...
Well, and let's talk about the Imagine Village, because the Imagine Village was a project put together by Simon Emerson, wasn't it? And
yeah.
It brought together English folk musicians like Martin Carthy, Eliza Carthy, Chris Wood, Billy Bragg was involved, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Jackie Oates at one time, I think, sang with it, with musicians from South Asian background.
Yes, it was myself, Shima, Andy Gangadin, and Simon Richmond, who's on keyboards, Ali Friend, who's playing bass. Yeah, it was.
And
just
the repertoire
real...
was English songs.
Yeah,
by and large,
English,
but with these
music,
extraordinary instrumentation.
Oh my God, I learned so much being in that band about the traditions of English folk music.
The sound that you created was like nothing I'd ever heard before, because it was repertoire. Here were songs that I kind of knew,
yes,
but with these added resonances from the doll drums.
Well, I mean, Cold Hailey Rainey. That's just like one of my all-time favourites from that.
To my head, my feet are like two lumps of lead. I'm stuck out here, half drenched, half dead, from standing under your window.
Oh, let me in, the soldier cried. Cold, hailey, windy night. Oh, let me in, the soldier cried, or I'll not come back again.
So those people at the Cambridge Folk Festival who said, looked at you and your drummers and said, that's not folk, was the message, well, you know, this tradition can go in a number of different ways, and it can embrace people who've arrived in this country, you know, more recently than 1843.
Yes,
you know
exactly,
what I mean?
Yeah.
And it can embrace people with different musical sensibilities.
Well, I mean, how did folk get a label itself? It must have started somewhere. It started from someone singing songs, basically. It started from someone picking up an instrument and then deciding that this is going to be a part of the folk category.
And of course, the guitar wasn't really an acoustic guitar wasn't really an English folk instrument.
A cittern, a bouzouki, yeah. All of these instruments, a banjo, all of these instruments weren't traditionally a folk instrument, but they became a part of it as the music grew, as the stories grew, and I think the music had to grow naturally with the stories, and the accompanying instruments gave it another added sort of different flavour. I'm still fascinated, just even watching Show of Hands, just watching Miranda on the bass, just going, how is she doing that? It's incredible.
And you've done a gig with Show of Hands, of course, recently,
yeah.
Didn't you?
Oh, I love... he's just amazing. I love him to bits. He's just incredible.
Steve Knightley of Show of Hands, of course, being on Folk on Foot on the podcast, and is an old friend of the podcast, in fact. And so he wrote a song, I think, inspired by you, called Mother Tongue.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I had an idea for a song that I didn't know how to put out, because I'm not a songwriter, but it was just, a fabulous idea. Brexit was quite current then, and lots of people were thinking of just leaving England altogether. But basically, I approached Steve, and we've been threatening to work together for about 6 years. And I said, I've got an idea for you if you want to have a listen. The song goes like this. In the first verse, he says, if I leave you, would you forgive me? And then in the next verse, he says, when I'm away from you, would you think about me? And in the third verse, he says, if I come back to you, would you recognize my face? And ultimately, you think that he's talking about a woman. And it's not. He's actually talking about his country. And then when I said that to Steve, he went, oh, my God. And I said, but, you know, it's all about people living in a different land. And so Mother Tongue was born after that. So I made a track just by doing that. I made a whole song. It was called, originally it was called Guinness.
Why?
From the Guinness advert, you know, with the horses going. The left field track, doom 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 doom. So I just kind of thought this will make a really good track, so I called it Guinness. A friend of mine came in, he's an amazing pukavich player, that big instrument over there, and he'd done a prayer on the start of it, and I went, what are you doing that for? And he goes, why? It's called a Ganesh Puran, Ganesh being the god that used to play that instrument. Ganesh is the elephant god. And he used, that was his instrument, the pukavich. And he goes, that's the instrument that Ganesh played, our god. I was like, okay, there's a problem. He goes, what's that? I said, well, you just turn this track in into a religious track. He goes, why? I goes, it's called Guinness. He goes, well, you have to change the name. I went, right, okay. So we called it Ganesh.
And what about your musical journey? Because you've talked about growing up on Led Zeppelin. What was kind of... Oh, you've got the Led Zeppelin T-shirt on underneath. Underneath, yeah. There, you've got the Robert Plant T-shirt.
So, do you remember?
And then you ended up... By the way, we should say, you ended up working with him, didn't you? The man you idolised as a teenager.
In 1997, while I was with my band Transglobal Underground, we ended up touring with Led Zeppelin around the Mediterranean. And I befriended Robert Plant.
That must have been like a dream come true, was it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But I was quite blasé. I was quite blasé about it all.
Well, just, obviously, you'd got to be cool, hadn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
But
totally.
was he as you'd expected when you got to know him?
I mean, he was. First, I was like, "Oh my God, you're Robert!" And he would like, he just put me straight down and said, "I'm a human being. Stop it, Johnny." And I was like, "Okay, I'll stop now."
So I just wanted to tease out the other influences on your musical journey. Then, so you're listening to Led Zeppelin as a teenager, and you're taking up the drums. When did you get your first drum?
So my first drum was from my savings, and I was about 13 years old. Big doll drum.
So you took out the doll drum, you taught yourself.
Yeah.
What did your mum and dad think about it?
They thought I was a complete idiot.
Did they?
Yeah.
What did they want for your future?
They wanted me to be a doctor or an accountant or a solicitor or something of that sort.
So did you have arguments with them?
I was a rebel, yeah, a real rebel, because my passion and everything was in the music. And it had started at age 7 without them realising, because they thought I'd learn the tabla and then play it in a Sikh temple.
But that wasn't your idea.
Yeah, and I took it to a different level altogether. Yeah. To the point where I started touring at the age of sort of like... when I mean touring, I was like doing wedding gigs at 14. With a Bangra band playing tabla.
And was there a moment when they became reconciled to the idea that this was going to be your career, this was going to be your life?
When I started doing some serious tours in 1989, and I was doing...
What age were you then?
I was 21.
Right.
And I was doing gigs abroad.
Did they come and see you play?
Yeah, now they do, yeah, absolutely. And it was, you know, the thing about Asian community is when my dad used to go to the temple, everyone would kind of like, you know, dig in the knife and say, oh, my son's just got a degree and my son's just done this and now he's doing architecture or whatever. And...
And your dad would say, my son's doing a bit of drumming.
Yeah, he'd be, exactly, not, it doesn't quite cut the same. Until I appeared on TV. And everyone approached my dad and went, I saw him on telly. Really good. And then this became a regular occurrence, you see. So after some royal events, we opened for the Commonwealth service at Westminster Abbey. That was good.
And then amazing occasion.
It was just a really epic one, that one. We did a drumming piece that I put together from one of my previous albums called Drummer's Reel. And the start of it starts with the... like this one hit on the drums, and then there's like... And I did that on purpose because I wanted people to feel the ambience of Westminster Abbey.
Where are we going now, Johnny?
Across there is the old South Hall. And you see that building, the white building there, was the original Tudor Rose, which is a dance hall. And there was a lot of West Indian people that used to come here and do their, like, dub plates and reggae nights and purple haze and smoke lots of funny cigarettes when you could smoke indoors. We are going now from the old South Hall, which is where we were, to the newer part of South Hall. When I mean new, I mean like as South Hall expanded and became bigger, the original High Street turned into South Hall Broadway. And we're going there.
And what
we're
sort of a there. Place is that?
Oh, you're going to see nothing but jewellery, food and clothes.
Right.
And one music shop in the middle of it all.
So we might fetch up in the food, I think, and we might fetch up in the music shop.
Yes.
Rings, bangles, bags hanging from the ceiling with decorated with sequins and pearls. And the whole shop is shimmery. And these are such vibrant colours, aren't they? It's a beautiful bright pink and a sort of aubergine colour, and then a bright green and gold. So much gold. So this is a huge store with some beautiful jewellery. Thank you.
So these are all, like, the real deal. None of this is costume jewellery.
Amazing.
Completely different from the other side. This is all real.
So these are gold bangles.
Yes, yeah. 22 karat gold.
It's halkiya, isn't it?
Yeah, 110
grams. 110 grams of 22 karat.
But they're beautifully worked.
Yeah, it's all hand done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a feel.
It's got a weight.
Yeah. This is 8,250.
Beautiful.
Yes. 8 grand.
8 grand.
8,250.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that
fantastic?
Isn't that amazing? Well,
thank you so much for letting us come in. Thank you, Marat. Oh.
So now you're smelling the barbecue and the food and, like, you know. I'm getting more hungry.
I'm getting hungry too.
Yeah, good. We're going to a nice place. I've got to show you how they make jalebis. Jalebis are quite amazing things.
What's a jalebi?
A jalebi is one of these, look. So it's a batter that's fried, and then it's dipped in that sugar syrup right there once it comes out.
My goodness.
Watch. There it goes, and it takes on all the flavour, and they push it down, it sucks all that sugar syrup in, and they come out like that.
My mouth is watering.
Yeah, totally. Come on, let's go in. There's no politeness with this. Finger food, you eat it on the street. This is how you do it, I'm gonna demonstrate. They've all got the holes already done. You basically pick up your chickpeas with this brown sauce is tamarind. And you put it in there like so.
So sort of pastry case.
Like that much. And then you get one of these, which is the spice water. And in the spice water is this thing called black salt. And black salt is sulfur. It's volcanic salt. You'll be able to smell a little bit in there amongst the spices.
Oh, yeah, that smells really good.
Yeah, it's an amazing. I love black salt. And you basically fill that half and it goes straight down the hatch. No bite, don't bite it because it will just dribble all down your.
I love the expression on your face. You look like a man enjoying his food.
Yeah. I'll do one for you.
Okay, thank you. You put the chickpeas into the little case.
A bit of potato. Get that in there. There we go. Right, you ready?
Yeah.
And this is the juice. And we only fill half because otherwise...
It goes everywhere.
Containing it.
Spice water. Right, and straight in.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. The explosion of the different spices and all comes into your mouth.
Isn't that amazing?
It's delicious and it's very refreshing, actually.
It is quite refreshing, yeah.
So we're back on the street.
We're back on the street now, and
where are we going?
After that hearty meal.
I know, exactly. I was thinking maybe, you know, a sit down and a slight snooze might be in order, but...
That'll be back at the temple now. We're just going to walk like a few doors down, and then this music shop was basically... it started out on top of another shop. So it's a renter space on top of another shop.
So it's basically jewellery shop, restaurant, jewellery shop, restaurant, jewellery shop,
jewellery shop, jewellery shop,
sweet shop.
Sweet shop. And then another jewellery shop.
And then a music shop.
And then music shop further down.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know the people in here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For years. Yeah.
We've still got the back of the store. So this is very popular.
Very nice.
Very good, bud.
Hello.
Very good. Hello.
He's the owner over there.
Hello.
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 Yeah,
hello.
Yeah,
how are you?
Good. Yeah, yeah, very good. Carry on, I'll speak to you in a minute.
Yes.
So we're here, and this is the famous jazz musicals in South of Broadway.
And the place is absolutely crammed with musical instruments here, isn't it? Whoa.
That's a harmonium.
Somebody's coming in to try a harmonium. Yeah. There's a bit of the mail order being packed and sent out.
Yeah, exactly.
Lots of drums behind the counter.
Plenty of drums.
Tablas, doll drums, mm-hmm. Sitars over this side.
Yeah, absolutely.
And guitars.
And guitars as well. And violins up there. Yeah.
Violins, yeah. I just love the... a potential in a musical instrument shop. You know, when you're in here, you just think of all the sounds, all the music that is going to come one day out of all these instruments.
It's
really inspiring, isn't it? And then you feel that sense of complete inadequacy, if you're me, when you think, well, I wish I could play one of them. What have you got there?
This is called an ikdara, but I'm just trying to... Oh, here we go.
So it's got one string.
It's got one string. That's what ikdara means. Look, even you could play it. Yeah. So basically...
You see, I'm already a virtuoso on that one. Well, that was a great sound, isn't it?
I like the effect that it creates the effect.
Yeah.
Instrument?
It's called Gopi Chand.
Gopi Chand, yeah.
Gopi Chand, yes.
We wondered if you would mind if Johnny would play some drums for us. Would you mind?
No, not at all. Yeah, Johnny can play any drum.
Oh, that's very kind of you.
I didn't want to disturb anyone else. If you're
Please go ahead. I'll look forward to hearing drums.
Oh.
You just popped in for a harmonium.
Yes, I have actually.
Yeah, so that's a beautiful instrument.
Yeah, they're all beautiful in here. So nice.
What are you going to play, Johnny?
One of the ones up there. I thought I'd pick a nice one out.
Whoa, slightly precarious coming down there.
But you patinza. Pachi.
This one's got the strap as well, Johnny.
It has, yeah. What are you saying?
I'm just wondering whether you...
strap it on.
What do you think?
Yeah, I'll give it a go. I'm not used to this length.
No, maybe it's a bit...
on this.
It's like playing with a low-slung guitar. You don't want it down...
Yeah, it's... yeah, low-slung guitar, that kind of
thing. Yeah, you don't want it down there, do you?
Yeah, down there. Whereas this one, you have to adjust your arm positioning if it's too long. So
right.
It's a little bit weird. But basically, what happens is, subconsciously, you get the blueprint of your own drum. And then... you don't have to look for...
It's like quite hard
if you're
adjusting
playing keys. Not, you know where the keys are.
Yes.
Where the ebonies and ivories are.
Yes.
So it's almost the same with the drum, whereas my gauge is probably about here.
A bit shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about here. And this is 2 inches longer.
So you have to adapt your style.
I have to, yeah. I'll give it a go.
Okay. That's got some volume.
Oh yeah, this is nice.
I like this one. And threading its way through our conversation all day has been this issue of identity and belonging and where you fit and what kind of music means what to whom and all of that. Do you have an answer now about, you know, what kind of music you make and what kind of music you think of as folk music?
Yeah, I think I do, yeah, actually. I've learned a lot about folk music playing with... obviously for the likes of Afro Celts and Imagine Village. With the Door Foundation, I never considered ourselves to be folk of, like, British folk music, but now more so, much better actually. We're folk!
We've had an amazing time.
Yeah, it's been
Johnny.
Great. It's been
thank great. You so much for showing us
You're
this
so
area,
welcome.
For telling us your stories and playing your instruments for us. Just been amazing.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks for having me.
Johnny Kelsey in Southall. We have filmed some of the performances that Johnny did here in Southall, and we're going to put them in our Folk on Foot on Film archive. If you want to get access to that, all you have to do is sign up to become a Folk on Foot hero. You make a small monthly contribution, which goes back into making more episodes of Folk on Foot, and then you get access to this glorious archive of more than 100 songs and performances filmed on our travels around the United Kingdom. So if you want to do that, please sign up at folkonfoot.com and click on the Support Us button. We love making Folk on Foot, and we can only do it thanks to your support.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.